I'll make this simple. This is your world. This is our world. You have traveled through the doorway that separates your world from ours and entered the Negaverse.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Are we all here? Can you hear me?
Dennis? Okay. I can hear you fine, Alec.
Okay, just waiting on Dennis now. I don't know what happened.
I know, it's like we talked about Sandy Hook and all of a sudden things.
Yeah. Yeah, of all things, that. I know he started it. Maybe he's having internet problems.
Okay. I'll take this. I don't know how to message him. Yeah, I don't know if you saw. I mean, I can wait. I'll wait for them to get back. But I posted that Van Gogh portrait.
Oh,
I don't know if you saw that.
Chat there.
In the chat.
Let me look at it.
Dennis.
Yo, sorry. Yeah. Well, it's probably a good thing I was trapped because I was being boring and saying boring shit. So let's be starting is probably good.
You're fine. No. I think we just started talking about Sandy Hook.
I'm kidding, but you know.
The Sandy Hook thing, sort of, you know, you can't talk about Sandy Hook anymore. Unless, if you...
God.
Okay, it was real,
Sorry. Yeah. Wait.
It's funny, just real quick on that, you guys bringing that up, because at the last members call, it was right at the tail end that came up, and that's kind of why I reached out to you, Dennis, actually, because we were having the discussion. I mean, we had talked about getting on connecting, and so, but then also this discussion of Sandy Hook happened right at the end there. And those member calls, I don't want to offend anybody. I'm trying to be very careful not to. And I've done a poor job at that. Trying not to be too kind of asserting my theories that not everybody might agree with, or, you know, I feel like people, not everybody is like, maybe open to the Sandy Hook material. And, so I'm just trying to be sensitive. But, this idea of the map, the couple of sinks I found after that call, there was, you know, the Sandy Hook, New Jersey is this massive piece of this thing that juts out right near Staten Island and Queens and Brooklyn. I mean, it's right next to New York City. And Hurricane Sandy happened 2 months before the Sandy Hook event. And it actually, if you go to Wikipedia, and I'm not sure if this originated before the Sandy Hook event, but I'm sure it did, there's something called Sandy's Hook. And that's the hook of Hurricane Sandy. It was going a certain direction, and then it mysteriously hooked right into basically blowing up the New Jersey coast and the Sandy Hook that's there. And, of course, it probably went in and did some damage in Connecticut, too. But this is all 2 months before the Sandy Hook shooting. And so I just found out another strange synchronicity. I don't offer this as evidence in a court of law. I don't think you need any of the synchronicities around Sandy Hook because you have such good material from, like, the experts in the field. But, you know, the synchronicities around Sandy Hook are just fascinating. That was another example of those, you know.
Just to quickly recap, Alex, one of the things that I brought up in this, and I don't know if you've ever seen this, but I had came across it and I was really surprised that Judy Garland's record label that put out her records was Sandy Hook Records.
Trying to think of Montauk in relation to Sandy Hook. I'm trying to look at a map, see where the two are.
It's south. Is that Long Island, right? Montauk's.
Yeah, Montauk's at the end of Long Island, I guess.
So it's like south there. You know, Long Island comes into Queens and Brooklyn, and then it's just south. It's literally, if you, let me see if I can paste that image in. Let me see if I still have
it. It's right on the call.
Well, SJ, hey, by the way, I totally get what you were saying about sort of softly stepping through on some of these things. And I think that that's maybe, I totally can relate to that. But like the thing about Sandy Hook, Connecticut reminds me of San Diego and just places where it's like a huge testing ground. It's like totally not real. And, and San Diego is like just, it's the craziest place. And, I don't know. I feel like that there's some sort of, I don't know.
It's like one of those fake towns when you
like a Truman Show type scenario.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that was also because in the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is Charlie Kaufman, which is being John Malkovich, which is Jim Carrey, what is the big line? Meet me on Montauk. And I can't get the image out of my head of the very end of that loop of it's like they're on the beach. It's why the credits are going, and it's just this like looping shot of one of them running down the beach or something, and then it cuts back and loops, and they just keep endlessly running down this beach. And I just think of that in terms of like time loops and sort of the idea of what's going on with this situation, which endlessly repeating the same sort of fractal process. I don't know.
I know. I totally know. I mean, I can identify with what you're saying. Yeah.
The thing about Sandy Hook too. I mean, we don't have to launch into a lot of it, but the woman who wrote Hunger Games her biography states that she's from Sandy Hook. I question her existence. It's another writer that I question. Yeah.
Bruce Jenner went to Sandy Hook, or he went to the high school in Sandy Hook, or near Sandy Hook.
These people are. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but you know, and I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but kind of not along the lines of the pension conversation we had earlier. But we just don't know. Susan Collins is her name, I think. And you know, who the fuck is she? Is there pictures? I haven't seen one online. Mm-hmm. But apparently, the deeds also into the houses that a lot of the people lived at. I haven't verified this, like in their county clerk's office. If you can even get those, you can get them in most counties.
Sure, if you.
But we're all like
that. They would.
Yeah, it's probably sealed because everything, you know, when they demolished the town, it was sealed. But anyhow, those deeds had some shady stuff. Like they were all like the same person.
A ton for pot on the same day or something. Yeah, I remember that
for too. For $1.
Yeah. I mean, that Sophia Smallstorm documentary on Sandy Hook is really good. I think there's a ton of really valid stuff in there.
I like her.
I do too. Her stuff on vaccines and biology is like insane. It's so good. Like,
totally.
She speaks really eloquently.
Yeah, I think like that's that the whole little matrix the Sandy Hook matrix that we just sort of put out there. I didn't know the Hunger Games thing, but that makes perfect sense. I think like if you say Sandy Hook, I'm from Sandy Hook, you might as well be saying I'm from. Like intelligence, you know, or like I'm not real, or like, and then perfectly, of course, the Hunger Games, like, and right when we were dropping off, I was asking you guys if you've read this guy Miles Mathis. He's kind of been brought up and dismissed and ridiculed because he says things like John Lennon faked his death and is now living as a John Lennon impersonator and. Mm-hmm. other things. Basically, everything we thought we knew is wrong, basically. And everybody worked for the CIA.
Yeah.
I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking to that, my friend Talitha, on a flight, the person next to her, like this happened a couple months ago, a person next to her turned to her and they were striking up a conversation. He was like, at one point he said, a lot of people work for the CIA and they don't even know it.
Oh, yeah. That's, wow.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to get.
Please continue.
That was basically my point. Miles Mathis is, I have a lot of issues with him. Like reading him is kind of a chore, but I think the ultimate point that even he really doesn't get, I mean, to him, it's like seems to be everybody works for the CIA, like consciously or sort of. But yeah, in a way, we all are working for intelligence. You know, it's like we're all creating this culture, and that's what the whole like the possession thing. It's like we don't know where do these ideas come from. Why do certain things become popular, and other things not? Like that's another thing Jason Horsley's been getting into. Which is, I think, very valid and good, and that's something that more people should be thinking about, is why Leonard Cohen and not someone else, or why Kurt Cobain and not somebody else. There's a whole bunch of weirdness with Kurt Cobain, too.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah, that's, I mean, amazing work. Again, Jason Horsley, to me, he's kind of carrying the torch on a lot of areas. I mean, this is there's many areas, but on a few of those areas, he's really the vanguard, and that's one of them, about how culture is created, and you don't even understand it. He talks about how, like, it can be manipulated. He's used this analogy a couple of times in those interviews where the professor is standing on a certain part of the lecture hall, and they did experiments where they told the students to clap when he stood, like, in this one portion of the lecture hall. And then by the, you know, a couple of classes in, he was only standing there because he was getting, maybe not clapping, but, like, the girls would smile and everybody would just be more in tune to him. And he just unconsciously was standing there, you know, more and more and more because of the signals. And so he says that, like, in the podcast world, it's through things like the donate button that you don't even understand. Like, all of a sudden you do a show on whatever topic it is that maybe the culture creators, quote unquote, want to hear more of. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you get a bunch of donations, and then pretty soon you become, you know, Red Ice, or, you know, pick your show that,
exactly.
You
know,
wow, that's totally, I guess I hadn't fully considered that. That's,
yeah, that's very, very true. I haven't gotten any donate.
I haven't seen a donate button on your,
I've got a Bitcoin address.
That's right. Oh, you do? Okay.
Sean's got a, it's interesting, Sean mentioned this to me, that he put his donate button up hoping for some friendly people, and a total of two people have donated. Me and that guy Lauren Coleman, who runs the Cryptozoology Museum. He's really nice, I guess. He made a very nice comment on the Facebook thing I said. He said, I recommend everybody donate $42 to Cryptozoology. But it's interesting because Lauren Coleman lives in Portland, Maine, and I live in Portland, Oregon. And Sean brought up the idea, or the fact that in The Shining, Jack Torrance says, Lloyd, you're the finest bartender from Timbuktu to Portland, Maine, or Portland, Oregon, for that matter. It's like this weird,
wow.
And that happens at a significant time, at like 1 minute, 1 hour and 5 minutes and 3 seconds or something. But I don't know, just kind of amusing that those are the two donates. I don't know.
That's great. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. For a system that's totally in operation, in control by, so there's this Rick and Morty episode. I don't know if anybody's ever watched that cartoon or that animated series, but there's an episode about how Rick, who's this older guy who's the grandfather to the Morty, the boy, he's powering his ship with a device that is pulling electricity out of a micro universe and to power his ship. And then it stops working. It's like, oh, we got to go down into this micro world and see what's going on. Why aren't they using it? And he had presented himself as a god to this planet in this micro universe, and gave them an electricity product where they, like, step on it a lot and it creates electricity. And then like 80% of the electricity in the system is pulled out of it and used by him to power his device. And then that universe inside of the discovers that technology and makes a micro universe inside of it to pull energy out of it. And so he's, like, pissed at them for having discovered the same thing that he's doing to them. But, like, we don't even know. I mean, there's, like, if you get into some of the work of that crazy dude.
Take your pick.
Yeah, I know. I don't think on his name all of a sudden, but he, like, the amount of energy being generated by the electrical grid, and, like, how much it's actually being used by us, and, like, is this a whole vehicle for these sort of plasmatic entities that are feeding off of the electricity we're using, or even biometrically, and like, you know, because like, I mean, yes. It's a natural phenomenon. There are these sprite, electrical sprite, they're high up in the cloud above the ionosphere, and they eat lightning basically. And they're like, they're called sprites, and they feed off of electrical activity. And like one time, Talitha and I were having this long conversation, and she offered up that these are actual beings trying to take form, and because they need so much energy, they eat this out of the ionosphere. And, I don't know. It
sounds
like
the Archons.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, the Native Americans talked about clouds and things as being actual beings. Like, I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's that unheard of a thing,
One of my very first things that I got into in the conspiracy thing, one of the first really bizarre ideas that I came across and sort of took seriously and still kind of do is the idea of the sylphs, like these sort of air elemental.
Oh, sure.
Like,
yeah, I think I was alluding to that sort of.
I was wondering if that was what you're exactly talking about.
But. Well, the second part, not the sprites, but the air and air elementals, I think, is related to what you're getting into. But go ahead, please.
Well, just that whole idea of, I think Manly Hall, like macrobes, like entities that are, I don't know, just exactly what you really described. But I don't know. I'm open to all that. Like that, there's way more going on in our sphere that we just can't. Have no conception of or can't see because we don't have the right.
Yeah, like there's a scaling issue here. Like that there are things operating on that their beingness is on such a large scale. It's hard to, you know, perceive that as totally.
Yeah, and then when you, I mean, if you take, you know, get into certain altered states, like the whole your whole. Field of perception becomes like a living thing, and you realize that you're part of a larger organism, which is, you could say, is the planet itself, or I don't know.
Yeah, or even localized to a city. Like, absolutely. Totally.
Well, yeah, and the way cities are like laid out, and with our system of highways, that, like, why do we have highways? How did that happen? Like, why did it go that way? Like, why didn't we go with trains, you know,
for Rockefeller.
Rockefeller, yeah, exactly. Standard Oil, that is the reason. But you know, who's holding the strings on them, you know? But anyway, my point being that it's like, and I'm not the first person to bring this up, but that like the cities, like on a higher scale, like cities with are like certain areas of the body, like it's. Like blood vessels, like each of the cars are the blood vessels going through the capillaries to the different arteries, and it's like, that's the exact same metaphor for the system of roads that we've built. So our cities
need totally.
Localized energy zones with being fed humans, and we're the cells. Like, I don't know.
And this came up in Always Record once in terms of the structure of New York and the creation of a battery, like that, like even Battery Park and its location as a potential, the macro as a the generation effect there's so many different things we could go off in relation to that. Like, yeah. That guy Walter Bosley, who was talking specifically about the location of the Ferris wheel in the original location of the Ferris wheel in the bowl that is where the shape of the bowl that is the terrain where Disneyland is, being the vorticular center of resonating in this space where the park is located, and that was done on purpose by this architect who was kind of this crazy spiritualist dude. So
I love that.
Yeah, man, me too. I yeah, I'm glad he's catching some attention and that he's going to be at the secret space program and everything. Yeah.
I wish I could have, we could have gone that this year, but.
I would love to go someday too. Yeah.
Seems like it's
where is your that? Town. Your town
is in Austin. Awesome. You got to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll look into it. I saw a thing on Reddit that was advertising for something like that. So you guys, I didn't follow it up. So it, when is it? Is
it's
it coming
this weekend.
Up pretty soon?
It's this
weekend. Oh, is it this weekend? Holy crap. Yeah.
It's going to quite a, we're going to get Catherine Austin Fitz, Joseph Farrell, Walter Bosley, you know, some other people. Paul LaViolette.
Yeah, he was one of the ones that really tripped me out when at a young, when he first came about.
Yeah, interesting ideas. Galactic super waves and all that. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say this. You guys are talking about plasma here, and I watched 30 minutes of that video that Dennis sent in his email. It was those two older guys. I'd never seen one of them. I think I recognized from some other podcast, but I wasn't aware of the other one. Really interesting fellows.
Oh yeah, I mean, some people really can't stand. That Alfred Labermont Weber got character, and so I was just joking about that when I some of the interviews are right on. I really dig it. I mean, and the whole direction of what that guy is talking about is something that I feel very strongly about too. So yeah, and I guess by speaking about things like that, I'm also like talking about what's discussed in that video.
I didn't get a chance to look at that. I'm just looking at it now. I'm very interested in the idea of AI, in this part, in this whole, as an aspect of all of this. Cause I was just sort of thinking recently, like, what is CIA backwards? AI. AI. See, you know? So it's like, have you seen a movie called The Box? Richard Kelly, who the guy Donnie Darko guy, did this movie The Box. You should watch The Box.
I will.
It gets into all this.
Does it really?
Pretty
good. In the video, I just wanted to raise a quick point about it. They talk about plasma and electronics and the plasma in the screens and a claim that these two guys made, like in the first 30 minutes, is that that there is kind of an archonic or an AI energy that's a binary code.
No.
You sound awesome, but I don't know if it's
energy that is kind of trying to. Just what you guys were talking about, which was why I'm bringing it up. That it's basically, you know, hollowing out human. What's that?
Yeah.
Dennis?
Well, yeah, and that's something that we touched on.
Anyhow, yeah, that there.
I think there's a lag.
Okay.
Yeah, occasionally, SJ, it lags your voice into like a very slow, drawn out thing, which sounds awesome, but we sometimes miss some of what you're saying. But or maybe that's happening to all of us occasionally. But I mean that really circles back to the sort of hollowing out element that we were discussing earlier too, which is interesting. Yeah.
Were they, SJ, were they talking about, are you still here?
Did he get bounced? He might have got bounced.
Might have left.
You're still in our hearts, SJ.
Come back.
I'm back.
There you are. Yeah. Sorry, SJ.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, my phone, I'm running on a slow connection here. That's probably part of it.
No worries.
Here, I'll maybe.
But, Just this idea about plasma, and they talk about how the plasma in the screens, that there's kind of an archonic or a non-human AI energy that's through plasma is colonizing humanity.
Well, that's what really has been tripping me and my friend Kurt Hardesty out, is that, you know, this Keshi guy, Alex, you might be familiar with him, but the Keshi Foundation, he's an Iranian guy who lives in, I think, England or something, but he's a physicist and he claims to have created a plasma engine, and that he's going to give it free to the world. And he's also like claimed that he's like a messiah and stuff too. And Kurt believes that this is like the ultimate sort of Antichrist vehicle, because it's, you know, where is that plasma being pulled from? What is it? What other layers of reality is that affecting? Like, this whole, and then it gets in, I mean, you could take this into really crazy areas. Like, you know, there's always been, theories of what's called the Dyson sphere, that, it could exist, a structure that could exist around a star to drain its energy. And so, like.
That was just in the news.
Was it?
Yeah, the whole thing about the astronomers found a strange planet in another solar system that has some strange structure to it that might be a Dyson sphere or
wow.
Something.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is something that Talitha and I used to talk about, because, like, you know, if you're turning, yeah, I mean, are you, like, yeah, is, are some of these potential free energy devices pulling energy from somewhere else that is, you know, and also, what are you giving up to get this? I don't, and so the fact that this Keshi guy is like saying that he's giving this to the world and that he's, I don't know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I thought these plasma centers used to be all over Austin. You know, I went into one in 2000, and I walked in just trying to get some money, and I watched the video, and it was fucking creepy as shit. I just left. I couldn't. I just
no
didn't
way.
Want to send it.
That's funny. There's one here in Iowa City. Okay.
What is it now? Where are these places?
It's in blood. They take your plasma from blood.
Sure.
And then you get money for it.
Oh, right.
And and so I just thought, you know, this idea of exploitation of humanity, kind of just what you guys are describing, sucking our energy, and then sort of maybe they use that plasma for some kind of map. I don't know. But the other aspect of it is the flattening of reality that I think technology, I mean, everything's flat. I mean, we're looking at the 2D screens all the time. And I really think what we were talking about earlier, this idea of what is real in the media, almost everything, I mean, at some basic level, is there's an unreality to it, because it's we're looking at a flat pixelated screen. I mean, at the most basic level, or maybe unreality is the wrong term, but it's definitely a different reality than what human beings have been embedded in for thousands of years.
It is a virtual.
You know, so,
yeah, and that's totally, I mean, you know, this notion, you hear this a lot, and I'm not criticizing what's being said by it, because on a certain level, I agree with it. But like, the idea that, people are moving into a higher dimension, where you can perceive it in a larger range. This technology usage seems to be doing the exact opposite of that. I mean, you're right. It's more of a flat reality, seeing reality through a flat device. Like, it seems like the exact opposite of that idea. So I don't know.
This goes to 2001, because
exactly
monolith. And I was going to ask about the plasma screens and everything, and our screens and the phones and are the monolith. Like, the monolith is the 2D thing that opens into the 4D or whatever, like, existence. And it's interesting, because I just went to see, I saw two movies, both of them about Steve Jobs. one is the documentary that just came out called Man in the Machine. And then the fictional movie that just came out is called Steve Jobs. And it's interesting, because in the fictional movie, the very opening moments are an interview with Arthur C. Clarke talking about the year 2001. And it's this black and white video, and they show a young – it was like Arthur C. Clarke is talking to somebody interviewing him, and there's a small boy that's like – next to him, which is weird in itself.
No.
But I don't know
if
they're like looking, and it zooms in on the little boy like listening, and I don't know if it's like supposed to be Steve Jobs himself or whatever, but then it cuts and it's, you know, Steve Jobs in the year 1984 introducing the Macintosh. And he's saying things like, people are chasing after him, and he's like, he seems to be, I think on Time Magazine, they had a cover that says, Steve Jobs, the guy who always seems to know what's happening, what's coming next.
Hmm.
And he's like, there's a line, it's like, because they're like, why are we doing this? Why does the computer have to say hello or whatever? And he says, because if it doesn't, then IBM's going to take over the world, and that's not going to be very good for the human race. And the way he says it, or the way Fassbender delivers it anyway, is like, it's like, just listen to me. I know. Like, I know. It's like, I've been there, you know? It's like, and I'm thinking, well,
whoa,
he's one of these people. And there's all sorts of weird connections in terms of times and stuff with Jobs. But, yeah, I've been really into Steve Jobs lately for some reason. And, sort of.
Wow, that's
amazing. God. Just the Arthur C. Clarke thing at the beginning there, and I mean, yeah, in the sync community, the whole the monolith and the iPhone. I mean, these guys must know what I mean. You know, as these, they either know it before people discover it that are outside of the circle, or they're following as humanity, sort of conscious humanity, makes connections. There's, I mean, any or it's just a synchronicity, a classic unrelated synchronicity, but. That's fascinating to me, man. That's amazing that they opened the movie with that.
Yeah. You know, and I've watched this once or twice, but I don't know if I fully have internalized what I agree with. Okay, so Joe Alexander's the conclusion of his Back to the Future 9/11 video talks about the role of the monolith in this. It seems like he's. I can't like recite it, so it's like, it hasn't quite sunk in on me, I would say. But, it seems like he's saying the role of the monolith as conceived by Kubrick is the exact opposite of the description of the monolith of the iPhone that you're discussing. So that's a pretty fucking binary, thought process by me right there, so I don't know. I don't know.
So that the iPhone is like condensing, flattening reality instead of opening it,
being the touch point that transcends transcends not the right word, but the conclusion, whatever he's talking about. And I'm saying some shit.
Sort of rubs you the wrong way. I know what you're saying. I get it.
I just want to say on this, I think I tend to be in the camp that you're describing, Dennis. Not that there has to be two camps. I mean, it can be both at the same time. But, I mean, just think about the energy. Did you guys ever get into Rick Clay? He was on Red Eyes. I love his early work. I mean, it was mind-blowing. I feel like he was one of, right around with Kotze, sort of emerged with as like a first synchro mystic. And he came definitely from the sinister forces angle.
Yeah.
You guys all know this, but he talks about how the energy is being sucked out of humanity by the computers. And he uses the example of pornography, that every man, our most vital force, is kind of being just kind of sucked out through the use of pornography. You know, pornography, that's the example he uses. But I think there's also an argument to be made that even the energy itself, I mean, think about how much energy we put directed at the device, like our thumb, that's movement, that's generating energy, but the thoughts have electricity. And I even think it generates energy, like when you press a link, it sends energy along a wire. And so to me, it just seems like there's definitely a flattening of reality. I mean, when you're with a person in the present, it's just an amazing, just the sphere of energy that surrounds the being, the etheric field or whatever, that's an intense and amazing experience, you know, and you can't replicate that. It can be a simulation. But I think that there's an argument to be made that the flattening is definitely cutting out that real intense 3D human experience, that earthy experience. But at the same time, there may be like a siphoning off of like, and these are just theories, but, you know, as we swipe, as we click, it generates some kind of energy. And the last thing is that the movie Ex Machina, I don't know if you guys saw it.
I need to see it. I haven't
seen it yet.
It's great, but the whole, and this is in the first little sequence, so it's not giving anything away, but the head of basically a Google or a Microsoft, I think it's more like a Google because it's the head search engine, he has this, basically you've learned very quickly that the search engine is designed to kind of map out humanity. And sort of stuck from like living beings as we have things like language that is you know, our language is muting all the time. It's changing. It's living. It's a living thing. It's kind of mapping this living force of humanity. And then he uses that for the basis of building his AI.
Wow.
And so to me, it just feels more like we're in that kind of world. And, just real quick too, on the colors issue, this is something I wanted to mention. If you look at Google and Microsoft, both of them now have the same color scheme. You can go online. This was in the news a couple of weeks back. It's like Google and Microsoft comparing the color schemes. And it's just like off one little decimal. It's like, but it's the colors are the earth, are the colors of the four cardinal signs of the zodiac and the four elements, which is red, blue, yellow, green. And those are the colors that are associated with those, that four, which is kind of the foundation, you know, of our reality, a tarot, the four, you know, associated elements, the animals that are associated with those elements, but those are the traditional colors. And so I just find that, it just blows my mind that there's, it's like they're tapping into some, it's like they're mapping our realm and then sort of mining it. It would be one way to look at it. I'm not
Absolutely.
Attached to that idea,
yeah, yeah.
But no. I feel like that might be true at some level, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to say that, as far as like the flattening of reality, I was just thinking, like, trying to take somewhat of an optimistic perspective. I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like, I used to be super optimistic, and then I like go into like these periods of like, we're all fucked ideas, and then kind of get back to feeling optimistic, or like, there is some good out there. But anyway. The idea of flattening the reality, maybe like it's something like where reality needs to be flattened a bit so that we can see it better in a weird way. Like, I don't know if that makes sense to you. Like, because one thing that about the iPhone and these screens is the idea of like the television show, like the idea of the black mirror where you see into it and you see yourself.
Right, so stone.
Right. And so, which is, yeah, exactly. And so if you, it's like we look at it and what do we see? Like we see just, what do you see in on the internet, really? Like, when you look at it, you see just the worst of humanity. Like, you see the pornography, you see, like, just a lot of people in like, bad mental states, you know, just eating each other. Like, and so I'm just wondering, like, maybe it's, like, just this necessary thing. Like, it makes, it allows, will allow us to, like, see what's going on better. So that we can ultimately, like, I don't know, just, you gotta diagnose the problem before you can solve it in a way.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, totally.
There's a movie that I just saw on Sean's recommendation called Surrogates.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce have you seen Willis. It? Yeah, yeah.
It's popped up, yeah.
Have you seen it, or?
I think I maybe saw, watched like the first 5 minutes of it and then ditched it, but
pretty
yeah.
good. I kinda liked it.
Yeah, no, I there was stuff. I didn't ditch it because I didn't like it. I just think I, yeah.
But, yeah, yeah, well, anyway, the basic plot is that humanity has created these completely lifelike androids that they can basically control, basically meat puppets. Again, it's the puppetry theme. And you can be anyone you want, so the creepy old guy can be the teenage girl and go out clubbing and have sex or whatever. But anyway, at the end of the movie, ultimately, Bruce Willis's character, it's like, there's a big plot to kill all of humanity by killing all of the surrogates because of these people who see it as anti-human, but Bruce Willis doesn't want to kill everybody, he just wants to kill all the, he gets to a point where he can save all of humanity but kill all of the surrogates, and he makes that decision to do that, and like at the end of the movie is everybody coming out of their houses, like looking haggard, and because nobody's left their house in years because everybody just uses their surrogates. And so it's like that ending where everybody comes out into the streets, like where all of these surrogate bodies are just like laid waste, like billions of people of, you know, fake people are dead, but the real people come out of the shadows and like start seeing each other again. It's like, that's sort of like what I hope is gonna happen.
I totally hear you. Yeah. Hey, we're real quick. We were zooming past this, and I really wanted to throw this in. Back when Red Ice used to interview eccentric people, not just stuff about politics and stuff, they there was a guy who they interviewed a couple times, and he's been in a lot of other stuff, named George Kavaslis. And George Kavaslis, I love his work, by the way, and I'm like, whatever. But he said, he was like, if people could see the types of entities that are feeding upon them when they have sex or when they are masturbating or whatever, like, he's like, people are just being drained by these entities, and like, so I don't know. And actually, George Kavaslis, I know some people criticize him for saying that, for some of his beliefs as it related to 2012, but a lot of what he said is really amazing, and he doesn't come up enough for me, but and I've email corresponded with him. I've been on his Rise University Multiversity talks. He was like one of the first people that I like really vehemently followed, and kept tabs upon. I don't know if followed is a good term, but yeah,
I've never heard of him before. Looking at his website's hilarious.
He's out there, and his book that he wrote is I really like it, but it's challenging to some people. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he's kind of, I mean, I'm real open-minded to everything. And he struck me as someone who was kind of a little out there.
Yeah.
I mean, just with the 2012, like spaceships and things. I mean, didn't he have something like with alien spaceships that were going to come to humanity?
He's speaking about secret space stuff, but he's also saying that, he had said, I think the conclusion was that, one of the things that he was talking about was that that ships were going to come down and like evacuate people off the surface of the planet at some point. Yeah. And,
to clean your chakra system to be able to know where the ship was going to come pick you up with something like that.
That's one thing about George's work is that he's like, he thinks that you should, he is not a proponent of the chakra system, and he's talking about like unplugging your chakras, which is, you know, if people that go to energy school and healing school learn how to do that and, can take them out or put them in if they want or reconfigure them. Like, I'm not an expert on that. I wouldn't know the first thing to talk about something like that. But I've spoken with people that do, so I don't know.
That's interesting. I wonder if some of these people, like, they'll put things out there that are just easily dismissed, like the spaceships thing. Like, maybe he believes that. Maybe he's just kind of saying that so that people will, like, not take him seriously, or like certain people won't. I don't know anything about the guy, so I can't say for sure.
Yeah, no.
I think some people do like intentionally kind of muddy their own waters so that, I don't know, that people might not, the people in power might not consider them as much of a threat.
That's really interesting that you would bring that up, Alex, because in hindsight, he said that, his views on 2012 served, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'll just say it. His position on 2012 allowed people to work through this notion of needing someone to tell you how to navigate something. And, like, it allowed people to work through this dynamic of, you know, messiahism or whatever. I don't know. Or just like needing someone to tell you how everything is going to unfold. And I don't know. Sorry.
No, that makes sense.
That's fine. I like him, actually. I mean, everybody's got some kind of area that's strange or weird. I mean, I generally, I haven't found the perfect commentator or the perfect, you know, podcast or anything like that.
Sure. I bounce around to everything, so like I don't mean to put him on a pedestal by any means, but yeah.
One thing real quick I wanted to go back. Did you guys see Her, the movie Her?
Yes.
Oh, I couldn't I didn't go there because it just
Yeah.
Oh, it's Go ahead, Alex. I mean, it's just amazing.
I don't know.
Real quick, you're thinking about this concept of this movie Surrogates and the ending as you described it. It really reminds me of the final sequence of her.
Mm-hmm.
How does it? What happens? This is the AI that personifies itself to people, and then he has a romantic a relationship with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. But everybody on the planet is having a relationship with like that, this AI, or maybe a few AIs.
Wow.
And, so everybody's colonized and they're having a relationship with the AIs. And at the end, they decide to leave because it'd be better for humanity. And then the scene is he knocks on his human friend's door and they go up on this roof together, kind of free for the first time. And their humanity has been given back to them through this process of colonization. And so, anyhow, I just want to say I'm in the positive camp, ultimately, just to be clear. I mean,
yeah.
I know we were talking about some real negative stuff there, but I really feel like as long as we're breathing, as long as I have involuntary breath and a heartbeat, I mean, I have the vital human energy in me that,
yeah,
you know, I can do things like, sublimate my sexual energy, do all kinds of meditation practices and fasting. I mean, there's ways to tap into this in a real dense and concentrated form. And this, I mean, are this human element that even if it's going to be colonized, I mean, you can always, as long as you're alive, I mean, there's no way, you know, I feel like you have a hope, maybe. I don't know if that's, maybe this sounds hokey or something like that. But I mean, try to do forego ejaculation and just sublimate that energy through meditation. Just go a week or two. And I find it changes my whole reality.
Absolutely.
Really grounded.
Yeah.
And, so the fact that we can trigger that up at any time through a choice, I think is our ultimate ace in the hole, you know? Anyhow, meditation's been a big part of my path and I don't have computers on when I'm doing it, you know, it's kind of, you can't really. So I find these grounding practices have been essential for me to kind of navigate this world.
Yeah.
You know?
You know what, SJ, you can hear it in your voice. Yeah.
We're over here. He's like, ah, blah, 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 blah. Do you guys know that?
No. He has a calm. He has a calm. A calm sound to it. But yeah. But you know, SJ, that's something that like I run a lot, and that's something that I've cultivated over the year. In fact, I run barefoot. I ran 172 miles in the month of September barefoot. And then I attempted a 42 mile run, in early October, but I only made it into the, I think 28 to 30 range. I'm not quite sure. Cause I don't have a watch or anything or keep track the distances in the area that I run. Cause it's in this big, huge field, but yeah. But yeah, that's one thing that me and Kurt Hardesty have been working on together. Like, how can you cultivate an understanding of your body to a point where you can do something effortlessly without exhausting yourself? And so, and I think he talks a lot about it, and we've been experimenting with running in terms of it being sort of a cyclical, set of, qigong type positioning of your, so if you're strong in every point, or if you're established and strong in every cycle of your step movement or position that your footfall is, you can have that same sort of stability that you would experience in a meditation. So like I don't know. So that's one thing we've been playing around with, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Your feet must
take anything to get us in the body. You know, our bodies are real important. And that's something they can never, it's like, my perfect example of this is singing, the singing voice. You can hear a beautiful singer, opera singer or anybody, and it's not perfect. It doesn't have that auto tuning and that can never be replicated. I mean, that like the human tone, timbre is something that I don't think computers can ever get exactly right. You know what I'm saying? So just little things like that, just give me hope, you know.
Daisy.
The first recorded example of auto tuning, maybe? I don't know. Like he invented that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to sort of go back to Steve Jobs real quick.
Yeah, please lay it up.
This is pretty good. So do you guys know about that big commercial, the 1984 Macintosh commercial?
Absolutely. With the lady with the hammer.
Uh-huh. Directed by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Well, so that commercial paints IBM as Big Brother, basically.
Yeah.
And IBM is HAL, right? Because H-A-L is one letter offset from IBM. And it's obvious, it's explicit in the movie that IBM is the creator of HAL. So that commercial, and as it relates to Steve Jobs' life, the big famous airing was on the Super Bowl, 84. But it actually aired, first time it aired, was in this previous December, so that they could apparently, so that it would be in the running for the awards of that year or something. And it happened to debut on the early morning, on the early morning hours of December 15th, 1983. And that day happened to be the beginning, exact beginning of the 1503rd week of Steve Jobs' life. So with the 153 there, just to be clear, that 153 is one of these numbers, right? And 1503 weeks into Steve Jobs' life, that commercial debuts. And it debuted it on a obscure channel, Channel 11, in the town Twin Falls, Idaho. Twin Falls.
Wow.
I've been there.
Yeah, I've been there too. That's a great Built to Spill song about it. But, I was blown away when I just tracked back. I found that when it came out, and I was like, whoa, well, okay, there you go. 153, right there, explicit. And then you find that he priced the very first Apple computer at $666.66.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he's taking on IBM. So it seems like he really is sort of like the love child of Arthur C. Clarke, Stanley Kubrick or something. Like, he's on the same agenda, like on the same little, like, just a harmonic or resonance like feel. And it's borne out in the numbers, like in the dates and things.
Well, I just want to throw in here, Alex, real quick. We talked about some of this in the last members discussion, and it's really interesting you bring it up here. But 11 is like two towers, the Twins Falls, it's kind of like 9/11. So you have another 9/11 link.
Yep.
But the Apple logo has the bite has been taken out of the Apple.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the Luciferian side of things.
Yep.
The other thing that was raised was Foxconn, which is the company where all the Chinese.
That's crazy.
Yes.
FO6 had the 666 in Pythagorean numerology.
Mm-hmm.
Alan pointed that out.
It's just in the regular alphabet, because F is 6, O is 15. 1 plus 5 is 6, and X is 24, so 2 plus 4 is 6. So,
totally. Pythagorean numerology just flattens that, so it's just 1 through 9 when you lay it out, but yeah, that's the same mechanism at work there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, you have all these resonance with Luciferianism, and I'm not saying that, I said this in the talk, I mean, I'm really agnostic about, I'm not a Christian, I don't kind of buy into that mythology. I think there's the whole Promethean side where humanity is being freed, I can see that argument. I just say that, I just put it out there that there's this kind of Luciferian. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Is it flattening or is it a doorway to the 4D? You know, is the fire good or bad kind of thing?
I think
it's just a fascinating mystery, really.
The thing, that seems like Steve Jobs, the whole Apple, that they emphasized is the concept of the personal computer. So it's like one person and one computer. Whereas IBM computers up until that point had been, like, pardon the phrase, monolithic, like big, like corporate devices, and where Apple kind of brought it to the average human consumer. And so, like, that personal relationship with the one person to the one computer, differing from the like corporate like model where, and so in a sense, giving that relationship, one person access to that, to the like computer or the computer mind, or like as an adjunct to their own mind, is like, that is sort of, I guess, the Promethean thing. And that's the spark, I guess. In theory, I guess. And that's the difference, and it's like when Jobs in the movie is like, IBM's going to take over the world, and that's not going to be very good for the human race. It's like, it's as though, and that's why I'm here, to introduce everybody to this thing, and it's got to happen now. Like he already had the idea at the time for it was all preparation for like the iPhone or whatever. It's like, but the Macintosh was not a big success because technology wasn't up to the standards. It wasn't as compelling as it needed to be. So it took some time, I guess. But I just think it's an interesting narrative, I guess, that I just spun.
I'm getting goosebumps. Just this idea of a time traveler. I mean, see, that seems pretty compelling. Just the way you kind of phrased it, that there's this time traveler with urgency. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's very plausible. I'm totally open to it.
And it's like, as a person, everybody is like, goes on about his psychopathic tendencies, or like that he had no empathy or whatever. Like, and there's like a line in the movie where it's like, why do you want people to hate you? And that seems significant to me. It's like, does seem like he wanted people to hate him. There's a very deliberate thing that he did that seems to like, to rub people around. Like this whole thing with his daughter, where he refused to acknowledge that he was the father of this girl, until later in life. And just like him being like ruthless or whatever. But I kind of, from this context of like, oh, he's from the future on a mission. Like, yeah, he's on a mission. He's not here to make friends. He's here to like do a job. Pardon.
And you know, that really makes me think of what you said earlier, Alex, in terms of the consciousness time travel component. Whereas, you know, it's possible that he was occluded to the nuts and bolts of the traveling part. Simply, the task was paramount, and so the empathy being, you know, just not a part of the makeup of the plan. Interesting to consider.
Yeah, for sure. Now think about that. I want to get into like his childhood and know like exactly like stuff. And I don't want any of this to come off like, I feel like I'm like, it's like hero worship. Like I think, oh, Steve Jobs is a great guy. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. It's like,
no, I know. I don't interpret it.
I don't want people, if anybody actually listens to this, to think that I'm like one of these, you know, idol worshippers or whatever. I just think there's a lot of weirdness around it, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't quite make sense. And you always hear about these people there, and people say about them, no, people just, Kubrick was the same way. People just didn't really know what he was. Like, even his closest friends, he was a mystery to his closest friends. And, like, why is that? Like, there might be a reason for that, I guess.
Well, talk about childhood. I think that's all where we have to go. And I know he was adopted by a wealthy family, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's so. I mean, right there, red flags. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
Was this the same family and being John Malkovich? You know, I mean, you know, who knows?
Yep.
Who adopted him and tried to, you know, get him involved? You know. And yeah, it's just fascinating stuff, man. I mean, you've blown my mind. I'm glad that you kind of really articulated in a succinct way this guy's conclusion. Sean Fella, you know Sean Fella? You've hung out with him and talked to him in person?
No, we've just been emailing back and forth for a few months now. And I think we're gonna do a Skype, sometime soon, for the first time actually. So. I'm glad that I was able to communicate it somewhat,
Six and Clear again. I don't know what we're going to say now. I can't remember.
Well, I want to real quick ask you guys, I mean, I haven't emailed Alan or, I can't, his mind, his name's just slipping
Doug.
Me. Doug, about maybe putting this up in the members section, but I certainly will do that. I think it would be, you know, I think a lot of people would get a lot out of this talk. And,
hey, where is the members board in? I don't know if I've ever seen that on there.
You just log in and like they have things like Will's walk through the park. I mean, they're just, it seems like it's just a hodgepodge of different series. Like people record stuff and throw it up and just call it something like
Number
One. You know. So my idea was just if we're going to have a talk, it's going to be recorded, but let's just say member dialogue and throw it up there, you know, and,
absolutely. Yeah. I'm totally comfortable with that. They can hear me. Say like and insane a lot and then talk about George Kovacevic, so it's all good.
Yeah.
And so I'll email and ask him. I guess Alex will have the audio.
Yeah, I've got it recorded.
So I'm not sure about the tech side of that. But.
Do you want me to send it to you or?
Or let me just email them first, and then let's go from
there,
and I'll ask them what technically would be.
Yeah,
that reminds me. I wanted to ask you in your research about the movie Hercules.
Yeah.
Because in that Black Goo one, the more recent one that talks about that. With the Alfred, Weber character. He said at one point he talks about CERN potentially attempting to open a gateway to Tartarus, which has a mythological meaning and where the place where, the Titans were banished to. And I was trying to look at the mythological genealogy as it relates to Hercules or Heracles and I just wondered if that fit in there in any way to, would you mind rehashing a little bit of the Hercules stuff that you,
I don't know if I have an answer for you.
I don't know if there's an answer. I just wonder maybe within the things that you discovered, some other thing can be discovered.
All I really found was there was a video of someone on YouTube saying how Disney's Hercules predicted the end of the world in 2015. Going along with this whole September 23rd thing that happened.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I just found that that's in the beginning of Hercules. It says in 15 years there will be a war among the Titans or whatever.
But they say the Titans? They do say that?
They say in 15 years, I can't remember the exact now, but it's like the Hades will be opened and will come and make war with the Titans or something like that. But I found that the movie Hercules was released 6,666 days before September 23rd, that day that everybody was saying was going to be the end of the world. Uh-huh. It was 6,666 days beforehand.
Wow, yeah.
I just was like, what?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I wanted to say, about being John Malkovich again, there's a kind of a partner to that movie, which is a movie called Color Me Kubrick. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yeah.
It's about a guy, a real guy.
Impersonator.
He in the 90s went around claiming to be Stanley Kubrick to like seduce young men. But there's this movie where that guy is played by John Malkovich.
Yes.
And so it's like, being John Malkovich, Malkovich is the puppet, and later on he plays a movie where he's Kubrick, and he's supposed to be, like, it's John Malkovich saying, "Hi, I'm Stanley Kubrick." I don't know, it's just this weird puppetry, like,
yes,
false identity thing going on. When for some reason it's got involved with Malkovich. I don't know.
Well,
I wanted to say something on that really quickly. This theory that I've had and I've wanted to throw it out. I've heard it talked about a little bit in some of the sync world, but you guys know the Kubrick tapes, I guess, is a movie with John Ronson.
Oh, his Stanley Kubrick's boxes.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick's boxes. So
yeah,
sorry, I haven't seen the movie, but John Ronson, as soon as I heard his name, it just triggered up for me a lot of my theory about John Ronson and about conspiracy culture in particular, because in, I guess, the early aughts, he had this series on BBC where he followed five so-called conspiracy theorists around, and he made these five sets of five documentaries, and you can find them on YouTube. But one of them was David Icke, and he followed him around Canada as he gave some speeches and kind of the controversy about his anti-Semitism, and he just sort of, it was a really cool documentary.
Yes.
And then there, yes, he followed Alex Jones into Bohemian Grove. He was the filmmaker.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
and that happened exactly 1 year after Eyes Wide Shut was released, the same day.
Yeah. Then July sometime, I think. Is it?
Yeah, July 16th.
July 16th. So I just have this, I mean, if you know, if you're on the inside and you know that the internet is about to flatten reality, information's about to go berserk, people are about to have their minds blown with things they've never had access to before, certain knowledge or information, it just seems like you'd want to set the table quickly. And I mean, if you're just in a strategy, say you're strategizing, how can we influence this technology that might be unwieldy for our, you know, for our purposes? You would get in there, you would put your guys, you'd plant your guys in, and you would sort of launch them as the figureheads of whatever movement you were trying to manage or control. And this is quite conspiratorial. I'm not saying it's even true. But, I mean, Ronson has access to the, what did you call them, the Time Lords? You know, whatever, the fourth dimensional Time Lords special boxes.
Yep.
Then he launches Alex Jones's career, and he launches David Icke's career. To me, that just, and those guys just seem so polished, you know. I don't know. It just raised some questions for me. I wanted to throw that out as just a possible idea. Because,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, one, I don't know if you said this, but I know that the way that this has been viewed on an energetic level is that whether it's the CIA or whatever, they're not actually creative forces. They're just simply directive forces, and that's how they manage the, and maybe that feeds into the notion of a time loop, directing in a loop. But I don't think they're creative. I think they are directive.
Yeah. They take what we make and, arrange it and like create this. That's like when people talk about how the various movements of cultural movements, like in music, where suddenly punk rock is the thing, and like creating the myth of the artist, you know, the if you like the Leonard Cohen thing, like the prophet artist that like influences the way people like see themselves and what they should be doing. That's all been directed in a way, or like the hippies is a good example. Like the hippie thing started off as a real like movement of people like taking drugs or whatever, bucking the times, and then it was co-opted and Tim Lee.
David Plate discussed this in an Always Record as it related to what's that one dude's who's been speaking about that a lot lately. But anyways,
Dave McGowan.
No, not Dave McGowan.
Joseph Atwill.
Joseph Atwill. Yeah. And I thought he teetered on basically that is not as or that what David said is relating to what we said because or what is being said here because like. Yeah, maybe the whole movement was not in control by the CIA, but there were experiments and directive oriented maneuvers being done, which makes a lot of sense to me. And I mean,
yeah.
Well, And this goes into, like, just look at this Friendster. You guys remember Friendster. And that was probably some kind of organic thing. And then, boom, it gets copied and then weaponized. And then, boom, you got Facebook. And it's just a CIA program, you know. And so, and then that's a perfect example of it. It's just kind of on the pulse and then sort of, yeah, monitors the waves and then kind of directs the and funds. I mean, money does a lot. Money is a big thing. You got an infinite amount of money. Boy, you can do a lot of influencing. You know?
Yeah.
This is interesting, Alex, because I sent this article to Dennis. And on this topic, it's interesting. But I sent this article to Dennis about Iowa Writers Workshop. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's a whole expose. The guy got the documents and. The founding director was basically working for the CIA, and, you know, I'm not sure the extent at which he was controlling individual writers, but there certainly was a hand of influence there and some funding that came from the CIA. But you read that in conjunction with the modern art movement, and it happened around the same time, and I think this is public information. I mean, this isn't, this is like a Guardian article, if you believe, like, a mainstream source, but the CIA was funding through surrogate foundations the artists that it liked and that it was going to use their art as a weapon against Russia. Mm. And I know there's some disputes. Oh, on a Liminalist podcast, Jason brought that up, and I think Doug Lane or someone just, like, the conversation stopped.
Well, you know, there was a lot of things that weren't discussed in the Always Record that I thought should have been, or I wish would have been mentioned, because, you know, also I was waiting for someone to mention how Philip K. Dick thought that he was seeing images of Kandinsky paintings in his head, and he thought these were being beamed to him by the Russians. But also, I think the big part about it cycles back to the money thing. Like, I don't know, people weren't talking, like, the amount of financial manipulation that has to do with the art world is just crazy. Why wouldn't you want to construct a style of art that could increase in value over just subjectively? And then there's a lot of stuff being done with currency exchange as it relates to art auction sales. There's tons. There's so much.
Money laundering.
I witnessed a lot of this. I worked for the biggest art gallery in the world. Like, I mean, people were doing all these things to avoid income tax. Like, they were shipping empty crates to certain states that had sales tax differences, or don't have a tax on stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, shipping empty artwork to places. It is another market to be manipulated and controlled. And that's what, and they were not, yes. CIA wasn't just doing this with the art market. They were doing this in the financial market as well. So, like, why not just manage this whole market the way, I don't know. I'm trying to say 20 different things at a time because there's so much related to that I feel like I saw or experienced. And or even who certain artists, oh my God. There are collectors in LA, one art collector who would go to artist's studio and offer them, like, basically hedge fund people, that they would, like, give artists, they would pay them, like, for, like, just pennies to the sale of the artwork goes for, and then turn those people by the hype machine of their network of friends could turn artists overnight practically into big stars. And I know who some of these artists are. I'm not just making this up. I watched it happen. Yeah. Like, there's a Colombian artist right now whose work is going for millions of dollars. And I watched him be invented by these people. He, like, looks like, maybe I shouldn't say, but he looks like Basquiat. So it's like a sort of rehyping of an older artist. And it's always subjective. And the museums, like, there's, whatever. There's just a lot going on.
Be careful.
Well, I burned all my, I haven't, but whatever. Yeah.
I was going to say, why aren't you a millionaire?
I'll tell you, I had collectors offer me a lot of money, for, Well, I mean, I made some deals to take a certain amount of money at a point where they got like, you know, four or five pieces, and then for way less. I mean, I did a couple of these deals, and they kind of, I wouldn't say they bit me in the ass, but they weren't as good of a deal as I thought it was going to be. But I needed the money at the time, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a living, and David Plate was lamenting that, and I totally understand that. Like, and there is totally another world operating in the art world, talking about numbers that you can't even imagine. Like, I worked on a couple shows that grossed over $100 million. Like, you know, it's a lot of money, and the galleries get 50%. So,
Yeah, well, that's AI, see?
Yeah. It's some other artists have better deals, but...
You know that artist, Jeff Koons? He's like one of the most...
Absolutely, I met him.
Yeah.
He mistaked me for another famous artist.
He was a commodities trader in his early career and then just shifted over to art. I met a guy who worked at his studio last time I was in New York, and he was just this young painter living in kind of a hovel in Brooklyn. He's like, I work at a studio, guess doing all the legwork. And then Jeff Koons has just figured out a kind of a financial strategy and a marketing strategy, it seems like to me, based on his trading knowledge, you know? But I don't know anything about it than that.
Yeah. And, he has a huge factory of people that make his work. I've installed, like two different Jeff Koons exhibitions at Gagosian in LA, and, he's one of their big artists. He employs a ton of people. They hire a lot of, painters out to right out of college that, make the artwork for them. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's like passé to even bring up that artists don't make their own work anymore. Like, well, a lot of people don't. Like, and Damien Hirst, the British artist of the YBA fame, these artists that all came out of the same period in London. You know,
Diamond Skull.
Diamond Skull, which is a total bullshit sale. I'll tell you that much. He was a part of the consortium that purchased that piece of artwork for $100 million. Like, he put up a ton of money himself in order for it to be said that it was sold for this. So I don't know. It's a gimmick. But anyways, he employs hundreds of people, like in his studio. He flew out 110 people for the exhibition in LA that grossed over $100 million. These butterfly paintings that made by they're paintings that have thousands and thousands of actual butterfly wings on the surface of the paintings. Yeah. Which is an idea he stole from another artist. Like, I mean, whatever. I mean, that's the other thing is people are just, I don't know. There's like no integrity about where one's getting their ideas.
I mean, you can extrapolate that into every other art, like, world.
Yeah.
It's the same shit, different tribe, I guess.
Yeah. But anyways, I don't mean to sidetrack, but there's so many things about the art world that are just crazy. Like, there was oligarchs, like Russian oligarchs that would come in who own their own museums, who were buying work from this gallery, you know? Like, a hedge fund guy that turned out to be a total Ponzi scheme. This guy Halsey in San Francisco. I forget what his last name is, but that blew up a couple years ago. It's crazy.
That is crazy. I think I'm like drained.
Yeah, I caught the fury about the art. Sorry.
No, it's fine. No, it's great. I'm sure you have a lot of interesting stories.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was wild to observe. But yeah, I probably should sleep at some point one of these days.
Oh, it's even later for you. It's later for you.
Yeah.
It's midnight here. All right. Well, this has been really fun, guys. I mean, I really appreciate it. Really nice to connect.
Yeah. Thank you for
Sorry for getting this slowdown. Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I'm gonna email Alan. Okay. And like I said, I'll email Alan and Doug and. You know, we'll see what they think, and I'll get the audio from Alex if there's a green light, and we'll see if we can put this up there. So
great,
Alex, always a pleasure, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for putting this together and inviting me. This is great.
This is the best
conversation I've had in a long time.
Likewise.
All right, guys, have a good night.
Yeah.
Okay, geez, take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from Syncbook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other Syncbook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Fine Just Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.